The state police only had 3 helicopters, all Bell Jet Rangers, but it was a simple matter to get one. "Where to?" the pilot asked over the intercom. "Bloodsworth Island, the ship graveyard," said Captain Ernest Joy. Didn't take long. "Call it an 18-footer," Freeland said as they saw Henry's 8th tied to the remains of a ship. The boat was empty. There was a beer cooler and some other stuff piled up in the back, but nothing else. They marked the map and headed back to headquarters. Captain Joy made a phone call.
"Coast Guard, Thomas Point,"
a voice answered. "Is Captain Joy, State Police? We need a little help," he explained for a few minutes.
"Take about 90 minutes, Warrant Officer English told him.
"That'll be fine." Kelly drove through the area he'd be hunting. It was a part of the city he'd never visited before, a bleak industrial thoroughfare, the air laden with the smells of various chemicals. The place he was interested in was a single freestanding building. There were only 3 doors, and all could be observed from a single point. To Kelly's rear was another vacant building, a tall concrete structure with plenty of broken windows. His reconnaissance complete, Kelly headed north. Petty Officer Manuel Oreza, Kelly's old friend, was heading south.
"Radio," one of the crewmen said.
Oreza took the microphone.
4-1 Alpha here.
4-1 Alpha, this is English at Thomas Base. Your pickup is at a dock at Dame's Choice. You'll see cop cars there.
In 20-25 minutes, Mr. E.
Roger that. Out.
What gives?
Oreza asked Captain Joy when he boarded the ship. A possible triple homicide, possible drug involvement. Oreza nodded impassively as he checked the charts and plotted his approach. Wheels were turning in his mind. Months earlier, that stormy night with Lieutenant Charon from Baltimore, a possible drug deal that he'd expected to take place somewhere on the bay. Oreza wondered if there might be a connection. A mile from their destination, they deployed a 14-foot launch.
"Well, damn,"
Oreza breathed as they approached the wreck. "We got the boat." Joy and Freeland exchanged a tense look as Oreza eased his launch beside the star craft. The cops got aboard gingerly. They pulled their handguns and headed for the superstructure, disappearing for a few minutes. Joy reappeared.
"We had 3 bodies up here," he called to Oreza, "and a hell of a large quantity of what looks like heroin. You might want to circle the area some. The girl told us they dumped some bodies hereabouts."
"Jesus," Oreza thought.
"Okay. I'll motor around."
Ritter was playing a careful but inventive game. There were 3 possible leaks on Boxwood Green. He'd visited each of them. To one, he'd said that they'd actually gotten a prisoner out who had died of wounds. To another, that the Russian was badly wounded and might not survive. But Ritter had saved his best piece of bait for the most likely leak, that they had brought the Vietnamese Major Vinh with them. And he'd just heard from Sergei, his KGB contact, that the Russians had this information. That narrowed it to 4 suspects: Roger McKenzie, his prep school reject aide Hicks, and 2 secretaries. Well, soon, he'd be sure. It was an unusual way to gather information, Kelly thought, as he sat and enjoyed his dinner at Mama Maria's. Mike Aiello, one of Henry's men on the boat, had been forthcoming about this place, a favorite meeting place for Henry Tucker and Tony Piaggi. There, a black man entered, nicely dressed. Piaggi saw the man, stood and greeted him, then led him back past Kelly's table and up the back stairs to a private room. So that's Henry Tucker. That's the one who killed Pam. He didn't look like a monster, Kelly thought. Monsters rarely did. To Kelly, he looked like a target, and his face went into Kelly's memory.
"What's the problem?"
Piaggi asked upstairs.
"They haven't come back."
"Phil, Mike, and Bert?"
"Yes."
"Okay, settle down. How much stuff did they have?"
20 keys are pure, man. They should have been back by now."
"Henry, Why are you getting excited? We've taken care of all the problems, right?
Tony understood Tucker's nerves. This was the really big score that Tucker had been working towards for several years.
Tony, what if it wasn't Eddie at all?
You're the one who said it had to be, remember?
Henry settled down. It could just be a matter of clumsiness in the processing.
Okay, I'll give him till tomorrow.
So, how was it? The crewman asked.
They fed a guy to the fucking crabs, Areza told him. Practically nothing left but the damn bones.
It was a sight that would take him years to forget. Heavy shit, man, the helmsman agreed.
You know who I bet it is? Back in May, when we had that Charon guy aboard? I bet that's who he was looking for.
Oh, yeah. You could be right, boss.
Hey, Wally. The tape was disappointingly scratchy. That was due to the old phone lines, the technician explained.
Yeah, what is it?
The other voice replied.
The deal with the Vietnamese officer they got. You sure about that?
Well, that's what Roger told me.
Bingo, Ritter thought.
Who is he? Greer asked as they listened to the tape.
Walter Hicks. All the best schools and look where little Wally ends up, Ritter grimaced. You want to know why those people are still in Cinder Green?
That's it, my friend.
So what are you going to do about it?
I don't know.
But it won't be legal. The tape wasn't.
Think it over carefully, Bob, Greer warned.
What if Sergei can't get it done fast enough? Then this little fuck gets away with ending the lives of 20 men.
Treason is still a capital crime, Bob. Ritter looked up.
It's supposed to be.
Areza was restless. The crab man and the other three bodies would deny him sleep unless he got it off his mind. Areza dialed the phone.
Hello. Lieutenant Charon, this is Quartermaster First Class Areza down at Thomas Point.
It's kind of late, you know, Charon said.
Remember back in May, looking for that sailboat? I think maybe we found your man, sir.
Tell me about it.
Areza did.
Oh, yeah, something else. I got a call from Lieutenant Ryan asking me to check on a guy named Kelly. Could you tell him that Kelly's back, please?
Sure,
Charon replied, and his brain was working very quickly now. Mark Charon found himself in a rather difficult position. The first order of business was that Henry would not be pleased to learn that his lab was gone, and three of his people with it. And a vast quantity of drugs had been lost, and even Henry's supply was finite. Worst of all, the person who had accomplished that feat was unknown, at large, and doing what? And now he could guess that Kelly was the man behind it all. Now Charon realized that he was no longer a policeman investigating a crime, but rather a criminal himself who was part of the crimes being checked out. He needed more information. He picked up the phone and dialed.
State Police.
Captain Joy, please.
His next call was to Henry.
Bert and his friends are dead, Charon announced.
What was that?
Henry said, groggy.
The State Police in Somerset have them bagged. Angelo, too, what's left of him. The lab is gone, Henry. The drugs are gone, and they have Xantha in custody.
What the fuck is going on? Henry cried.
I think I can tell you that, too. We need to meet.
God almighty!
Roger Mackenzie was pale and suddenly nauseous. Ritter nodded, watching Mackenzie digest the news that his aide was a traitor.
What do you want to do?
It's a criminal offense, Roger, Ritter pointed out.
I'm heading up the re-election team. An espionage investigation in our office. It could ruin everything.
I'm sorry, Roger, but this little bastard betrayed his country.
I could pull his security clearance, kick him out.
Not good enough, Ritter said coldly. He is not going to walk away from this.
You think that bringing down the president will do the country any good?
Well, I'm coming to you for guidance, Ritter said.
We can't afford an investigation that leads to a public trial. That is politically unacceptable.
Mackenzie hoped that would be enough.
Ritter nodded and stood.
Though it was satisfying to have a free hand, Ritter was now faced with something that, however desirable, he did not want to become a habit.
Frank, Ryan said into the phone, I got a tough one for you. When that Sergeant Meyer called in from Pittsburgh, anybody else you mentioned that to?
That was the day Charon shot that dealer, wasn't it?
Alan thought back.
I might have said something to him. Only other person I talked with that day, come to think of it.
Okay, thanks, Frank. Ryan hung up, then dialed Captain Joy of the state police. He warned him to keep Xantha safe and to keep a lid on the case. Joy gave him his word.
You're in early,
Douglas observed as he entered.
Our friend's back, Ryan said, handing him a photo of Kelly. Want to drive down to Somerset and interview this girl?
You think?
Yes. I think we have our witness. I think we have our leaker, too. Ryan explained that one quietly.